Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Ask Me call on the urgent need for state and local aid with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question and answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touchtone phone. Please note this call may be recorded. I will be standing by should you need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn the program over to Ask Me President Lee Saunders. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Good afternoon, and thank you all for joining us. I'm Lee Saunders, President of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, a union of 1.4 million public service workers. I hope everyone is being strong and safe during this unsettling time. I want to make 2 points as I introduce Speaker Pelosi, Leader Schumer, and four of AFSCME's finest frontline workers. Then I'll come back at the end to make a few remarks. First, it's important to understand what we mean when we talk about investing in state and local aid. It means providing tools and resources to keep frontline healthcare workers, nurses, EMTs, and first responders on the job at a moment when thousands are getting sick every single day. State and local aid means keeping frontline corrections officers on the job and safe, able to protect our communities. State and local aid means supporting frontline child care and home care providers who are teaching our children and caring for our most vulnerable people, often without personal protective equipment. State and local aid means social workers can help victims of domestic abuse who are trapped inside their homes with a violent partner. State and local aid means empowering behavioral health professionals who are helping people cope with the anxiety and mental health impact of this crisis. State and local aid means helping frontline unemployment insurance processors clear the huge backlog of claims so those who've been laid off can keep a roof over their heads. And state and local aid is not an abstraction. It means the schools are strong. It means the trash gets picked up. It means the streets and roads get fixed. It means clean water comes out of the tap. And it means when you call 911, the ambulance shows up on time. That's what state and local aid means, and every American must know that. Second, this is a very simple point. We cannot beat this pandemic and reopen our economy if these frontline workers are thanked with pink slips. We learned after the Great Recession that austerity is not the answer. Recklessly cutting state and local public services is part of the reason we are in this situation today. We cannot make that mistake again. And with Speaker Pelosi and Leader Schumer leading the way, I know we won't make that mistake again. With that, it's my honor to introduce a great friend to working people, Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Nancy?
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I love the litany that you spelled out there of the workers who serve the American people at the state and local level. It's about the quality of life that people enjoy, the safety of communities, the UI checks at this time, as you said. So it's about all those specific things, but it's about meeting the needs of the people, as you so brilliantly indicate. I love your list, because you listed our heroes. Our health heroes, our labor champions, are on the front line against the coronavirus, and we must do everything to protect them. That's why I'm so pleased to have had the invitation to join you, Leader Schumer, Ms. Shirley, Blake, Jason, and Jared. Ms. Shirley, Blake, Jason, and Jared are our VIPs on this call. Their message is the message of eloquence. Their stories are the ones that will persuade. We have all the statistics, and they're convincing, but the eloquence of your statements is the power of it all. Know your power. So right now, the House is hard at work with our next bill, CARES 2, which must contain robust state funding for state and local governments to pay frontline workers. Leader Schumer is a relentless champion for the state and local funding, and we look forward to being very robust as we go forward into CARES 2. But he's talked about it in every bill that we have passed. We did get some money in CARES 1. We need more in CARES 2. Governors and mayors, Republicans and Democrats, are crying out for support. As for the U.S. Conference of Mayors has said, cities are right now being faced with having to make decisions that include laying off employees, cutting budgets, and reducing or eliminating critically needed services. At the same time, we're being called on to help lead the fight against the pandemic. The National Governors Association, by the way, the U.S. Conference of Mayors is chaired by a Republican mayor. The National Governors Association Chairman Larry Hogan, a Republican, said, without sufficient federal relief, states will have to confront the prospect of significant reductions to essential services, which will in turn devastate the economic recovery and our effort to get people back to work. This support for state and local is bipartisan among the mayors and among the governors, county officials, and the rest. Yet, Leader McConnell says the states should go bankrupt, and we're not writing a check to send out to states to allow them to finance mistakes they have made. Really? Really? He's referencing Illinois, a state where mistakes were made under a Republican governor. We want this to be bipartisan, nonpartisan, but we cannot let the mischaracterization stand. This is all about the coronavirus. And as Mr. Leader Schumer has just protested on this, it's about the outlays for the corona, yes, but it's also about the revenue loss, that has to be compensated for. Our heroic public workers are risking their lives to keep us safe. How can we look them in the eyes and say, as Mitch McConnell will, too bad? Congressional Democrats will not accept this senseless, callous attitude. We're united House and Senate, and our commitment to protecting workers and defeating this crisis is central to who we are. So in this bill, we must ensure that we can pay and protect public employees, yes, nurses, EMS heroes, health heroes, correction officers, sanitation workers, child care providers, custodians, public health workers, child protective services, transit workers, mental health providers, as the distinguished president mentioned. So again, we've got to make sure that we protect your health and safety as you, so many of you help to save the lives of others. Your lives are at risk, and now your jobs are too. I'll go into some more of it, but my time is expiring here. So I will just say that that is our commitment. We want to do it as soon as the atmospherics of this virus enable us to do so, but we're ready. And we know that you are heroes. We salute you. We thank you all. And we could not be the country we are without you. And again, I thank AFSCME, which has always had a special place in my heart. Right, Mr. President. Again, I'm going to yield back in the interest of time, but hope to have time to share some more thoughts about what our caucus is up to. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Madam Speaker, for all of your leadership that you show every single day. Now it's my pleasure to turn the floor over to someone who has always stood in our corner, always, protecting our rights and freedoms, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. Chuck?
Well, thank you, Lee, and I want to thank you. You are one of the greatest leaders that working people have had in this country, and your steadfastness, we've known each other for decades, to defend the men and women who work in America, who work for our state, county, municipal governments, our federal government, and so many other workers is just breathtaking and wonderful. I want to thank our four participants, one of whom, Jared, is from New York, from Dobbs Ferry, and every one of the workers, the government workers who work so hard. These are people who care, who make our country tick. They could feel, they may not be feeling well one morning in a typical day, not during even coronavirus, but they go to work because of their dedication. And all too often, too many have picked on government workers so unfairly because we know how important they are. I want to thank Speaker Pelosi. There is no one who has stood up stronger for both the working people in general and our government workers than she has. And she and I stand shoulder to shoulder. We are going to make sure, absolutely sure, that a robust state and local appropriation is made in the next in CARES 2 bill. We need it. Our country needs it. Everyone needs it. So it's amazing with how important this is and all the people who both Lee and Nancy mentioned who are doing such vital jobs to our country, that Leader McConnell would show how out of touch he is when he suggested that we should let the states that are being crushed by the coronavirus go bankrupt. Now, bankruptcy is not an abstract concept when it comes to states and cities, and no one understands this better than Lee and AFSCME. What Leader McConnell is suggesting would lead to hundreds of thousands of vital state and local government employees, nurses and health workers, correction officers, sanitation workers, so many others being fired or furloughed. What did they do, Leader McConnell? Why are you suggesting that they should lose their jobs? He is saying, and now he's come up with a new little subterfuge. He's saying that that average folks, hardworking people like the people we just mentioned, don't deserve the same help as big businesses get. Well, he's wrong. You, the people who are represented by AFSCME and so many others, are the people who make sure the unemployment checks are going out and keep your communities running even during a global pandemic. You are showing up at work, putting your health at risk to support the American people. Are we really going to thank you with pink slips? No way. Not on my watch, not on Speaker Pelosi's watch, not on Lee's watch. During a healthcare crisis, unfortunately, Leader McConnell is playing politics and talking about red and blue states. This isn't about politics. It's about people, people's jobs, people's families, people's communities. Day and night, workers like the ones we're going to hear from remain on the front lines of the coronavirus pandemic. But this public health crisis is putting a huge strain on state and local government budgets. Some have already started to impose layoffs and furloughs. Well, Congress should not abandon any workers, especially public service workers. The challenge of containing the pandemic is too great. And know that Democrats, House and Senate, are working hard, fighting hard for all of you on the front lines. America needs to do all we can to fight against the coronavirus and rising unemployment. The McConnell plan will only drive up unemployment even higher. Corona doesn't care. The coronavirus doesn't care if it's a blue state or a red state. There's no such thing. Cities and states have incurred huge COVID expenses. Because they're doing the right thing with social distancing, they're not getting revenues. So we need two things. We need a large increase in funding for state and local governments, big and small, and we need to make sure that they can use this money to make up for lost revenues, which Secretary Mnuchin and even President Trump said they would do. Let's hope they stick with it. Economic activity has stopped right now. Until we have testing and treatment, we have to socially distance. That's not mismanagement. It's sound leadership. So there are two choices. The federal government steps up and helps our workers like we're helping small businesses, helps our public service workers like we're helping hospitals, like we're helping other groups. And, or, the other choice, the worst choice, more layoffs and our economy gets worse. But guess what? Now Leader McConnell will put a new wrinkle in this one. He says he'll only consider relief for state and local governments in exchange for a liability shield for business owners. How does that make sense? That's another example of the Republicans' misplaced priorities. During this global health crisis, they're worried about protecting the companies. Democrats are fighting to protect the workers. If an employer makes an employee do something that is untenable, so shouldn't the employee have some rights here? Instead of making sure businesses have PPP for their employees, McConnell wants to make it harder for workers to show up at their jobs and to hold their employers accountable for providing safe working conditions. Instead of fighting for more testing or to help everyone working on the front lines, Senator McConnell is fighting to protect corporate executives. We want to reopen the country, but we can't get back to work without addressing the health crisis. The two issues are not separate. Until we can reopen safely, the federal government must be ready to step in and help workers on the front lines, public servants, workers, and all workers, wherever it's needed, because we're in this together. Lee and the workers who are talking today, we will keep working hard for you because you are out there fighting hard for us.
Thank you, Leader. Blake?
Thank you, Leader, and thank you, President Saunders. Hello, everyone. My name is Blake Anderson, and I am an emergency medical technician from Northern California. I'm also a proud AFSCME member of the United EMS Workers Local 4911. Public service has always been a key part of my upbringing, so working on the front lines to keep my community safe and healthy is what drives me every day. Duty to my community is what drove me to answer the call and deploy when California suffered from the devastating Camp Fire, which took over the town of Paradise, California. It's also what drove me to volunteer for the strike team of emergency medical service professionals who were deployed and have been deployed to support regional efforts, including the Grand Princess cruise ship. My team and I were on call working around the clock to assist with efforts to treat patients on the ship and transport those with symptoms safely to the appropriate medical facilities. Whether someone was displaying symptoms or was not, we took the necessary precautions to keep ourselves, our patients, and our community safe. Currently, I am supporting response efforts wherever I am needed. That often means going where there are clusters of the outbreak. I can tell you that as someone who is working directly with people who may and have been confirmed COVID positive, it is vitally important that employers and our elected leaders from the White House to Congress and on down provide first responders with what we need to fight this pandemic. But we can't make our communities safe now and certainly can't reopen our communities if private sector first responders and other public service workers are on the front lines and then are laid off. My unit goes wherever the fight is, wherever we are needed, but we are already seeing workers furloughed and losing hours at this time when we really cannot afford to let up and take our eye off the ball. I am willing to help out for as long as I need to because we need people to step up in these trying times. When there is an emergency, my colleagues and I do not hesitate. We rush in because every moment counts when lives are at stake. I urge Congress to take that same approach to funding our communities and public services. That means fighting right now to ensure that we keep up staffing levels we need to keep doing our job. We need to be prepared because this fight is not over. We need everyone out there. I urge Congress to fund the front line. Thank you.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Shirley Thomas. I had word that Duval, good afternoon. My name is Shirley Thomas, and I have worked at a custodian at Duval County Public School for over 19 years. After all this time, my motivation is still the same. I love taking care of the children and treating them like my own with care and love. Every day I'm happy knowing that I work to keep our children safe and secure. I make sure that the classrooms, bathrooms, cafeteria, and all common space are sanitized so the kids can stay focused on learning and growing. This past weekend, after 19 years, I was called into a meeting and told that I would be laid off. Although we had technically been furloughed, there is no telling when and if we'll be asked to come back to work. This news left me scared, worried, and unsure of how I was going to make ends meet. As the head of my house, my paycheck helped keep the lights on and put food on the table for myself, my two daughters, and my sister and my brother. My sister and I also take care of my brother, who suffered a bad stroke without income. I worry about paying for gas so we can take him to his doctor's appointment. I'm a diabetic, and I also have canceled a lot of procedures to remove a blood clot from my ankle because I can't afford it right now. My medication are expensive, and I'm hoping that I will have what it takes to last me until I'm able to go back to work again. I'm very thankful that my church is helping me, and I'm doing my best to keep my head up and keep it moving. As our leaders debate over what additional funds are needed, I asked them to consider how falling states and local governments will hurt our community. We can't reopen school without the work custodian like myself to keep them clean and safe for our young ones. When this epidemic hit, I didn't abandon the kids of the school when they came for a safe place to learn. I hope Congress won't abandon me or others like me who just want to help our community get back on their feet. My job gave me stability to take care of my kids. It gave me stability to know that I will be able to retire now that I've reached that age. It gave me joy to work in a public service. Overnight, that stability is gone, but I will continue to live by prayer.
Jason?
Good afternoon. My name is Jason Suggs, and I'm an unemployment insurance professional at the Maryland Department of Unemployment Insurance. I'm also a proud AFSCME member and president of AFSCME Local 3641, which represents Maryland state employees in various roles, from elevator inspectors to job service specialists to unemployment insurance professionals like myself. Over the past 5 weeks, more than 24 million people, roughly one out of every seven workers, has applied for unemployment insurance. Think about that. These days, our office is servicing more claimants than ever before. This past Saturday, my office in College Park, between the avalanche of phone calls, processed over 1,000 separation forms from employers in the span of 5 hours. In normal times, we process closer to 300 in a week. Over the past few years, states have made cuts to critical public services as a cost-saving measure. In the wake of COVID-19, we see how this process has clearly hurt public services, such as unemployment insurance offices. We never know when something like this is going to happen, and we can't afford to be short-staffed when we have to process millions of claims. We can't be short-staffed when communities are counting on us. We can't be short-staffed at a moment of crisis. On Friday, we rolled out a new application that allows Marylanders to file all types of claims entirely online, including those who are eligible for regular benefits, CARES Act benefits, and individuals who previously required to file by phone. Unfortunately, we were not trained on the system until the night before its launch, and a couple of hours in, the site crashed. Meanwhile, we are learning the process along with the claimants. They are asking us questions, and we can't give them answers because we just don't know. Or we have to place them on a long hold for extended periods while we search for answers. Oftentimes, they've already waited for 5 hours. I feel for each claimant on a human level. Every day, I spend about 12 hours speaking with hardworking folks who shared their heart-wrenching stories. They've done everything they were supposed to. They've gone out, they've gotten a job, they're providing for their families, and in some cases, they're now waiting 6 weeks or longer to receive unemployment insurance benefits. And many are finding out after that they are ineligible for benefits altogether or that they must provide a mountain of paperwork in order to support their claim. The other day, I was on the phone with a gentleman who tearfully described how he and his wife no longer have money to buy food for their four children. He shared this with me as I explained to him that after filing for 6 weeks and he finally got to someone on the phone, that he is ineligible for benefits based on a technicality. By the end of the call, I was in tears as well. Our neighbors are literally crying out for help. At a moment when record numbers of workers across the nation are waiting anxiously for unemployment benefits to help feed their families and keep roofs over their heads, they are facing an unemployment insurance system that is riddled with red tape. The COVID-19 pandemic shows why it's critical to strengthen and adequately fund our state government programs, and that's why we're calling on Congress to lead with compassion and provide additional funding for state and local governments in the next relief package. Thank you.
Hello, excuse me. Hello and good afternoon. My name is Jared Rosenberg. I'm the paramedic supervisor for the police department in the town of Greenberg, New York, in Westchester County. I'm also the president of the local CSCA unit, 8215, for the town of Greenberg, and AFSCME Local 1000. In Greenberg, our EMS unit is part of the police department. It's a dual unit that consists of approximately 145 first responders, including police and 40 trained EMS workers covering an area of 42 square miles. We serve roughly 84,000 residents. Throughout this crisis, my role has been to ensure that our workforce is trained and equipped to protect themselves, safely assess and transport potential cases of COVID-19 to the hospital. About half of our calls are COVID-related, with patients reporting high fever, coughs, and shortness of breath. I'm very concerned about the budget shortfalls we are seeing at the local level. We have already been asked to assess where we can cut expenditures. Here's one thing I know for sure we can't afford to cut: the dedicated people on the front lines of this fight. For their dedication and for the role we need them to play moving forward as we try to defeat and recover from COVID-19, it would be dangerous and a national disgrace to lay off the public service workers who have stepped up for our communities every day. We need Congress to immediately send our communities the aid we need and deserve. From the beginning of this crisis, we have worked hard to protect ourselves and our patients. At one point, due to the lack of testing, we had about 20% of our workforce sidelined because we couldn't confirm if they were infected. That was a big detriment to our efforts to contain the virus. And besides, we haven't been able to get masks and PPE from the federal government. We've been forced to collect masks from our own communities. We've had to spend local funds to order what we need, often paying a hefty markup to purchase masks. Our communities, local organizations, and associations have helped to get us thousands of masks, but we shouldn't have needed to do it this way. After all, the very prospect of layoffs is downright shameful. We can't beat the virus and recover as a nation if we cut the services and the public service workers we need now more than ever. We've never hesitated once to protect our communities. It's our Congress now. It's on Congress now to do the same. Please, we are asking for Congress to fund the front lines. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Speaker Pelosi and Leader Schumer, and a special thanks to Shirley and Blake, Jason and Jared. They are truly everyday heroes every single day. And there are so many just like you around the country, proud and resilient, standing fearlessly on the front lines of this pandemic. At this moment of distress and despair, public service workers are answering the call and doing so at great personal risk to themselves and their families, putting the safety of their neighbors over their own well-being. Many public service workers can't telecommute. The very nature of the job makes social distancing impossible. In too many cases, AFSCME members are using makeshift masks and gowns because we don't have PPE. For our service and sacrifice, courageous public service workers just have one simple request: help from the federal government to do our jobs, jobs that have never been more important. Right now, state and local governments are going broke. With the economy in a tailspin and the tax base crumbling, they have begun imposing layoffs and furloughs. So the very people saving us during this devastating public health crisis, who deserve our deepest respect and gratitude, are fearful of losing their jobs. It's shameful and unconscionable. The federal government has the power to make this right, to provide the support we need right now when our communities need us most. But so far, Congress hasn't delivered. The relief bill that passed last week had important provisions, including support for hospitals and small businesses, but cash-strapped state and local governments were left out in the cold. Now, when I say Congress hasn't delivered, let me be real clear that I am not talking about Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer. They have fought for us every step of the way, every single day. I'm talking about folks who can always find billions to bail out big corporations or to give the super wealthy generous tax breaks. But when working people in their communities need help, when it comes to funding essential public services in a life and death situation, they become stern deficit hawks. We've got a Senate Majority Leader who has said states and localities should go bankrupt. In the meantime, public service workers are on the ground every day. in the most difficult and dangerous conditions getting the job done. It's time for our leaders to have our back. We need $500 billion in direct grants to states, localities, and school districts, plus an additional $200 billion in Medicaid relief. That's the bottom line. Without it, we can't defeat COVID-19 and return to normal life in America. And it's not just me that's saying it. It's not just Democrats who are saying it. 21 Republican governors wrote to congressional leaders as far back as March 23rd, asking for direct block grant assistance to states to ease their burden and allow them to continue providing critical services. You know, today is Workers' Memorial Day. Every year on April 28th, we honor those who left for work one day and didn't come home. More than ever before, AFSCME members and others are putting their lives on the line just by doing their jobs. I was on a call last week with the executive director of District Council 37, our AFSCME affiliate in New York City, and he said more than 100 of his members have died since this outbreak began. New York is the worst of it, but not the full extent of it. Public service workers are dying across the country. This is heartbreaking. This is unacceptable. We have a moral obligation to do everything in our power to protect our everyday heroes. We have to fund the front lines. We need state and local aid now. Operator, you can open up the call for questions, please.
Certainly. And at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. And we'll go first with Emily Cochran with New York Times. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you so much for doing this call. You mentioned the concerns that Republicans raised about how aid for state and local governments would be dispersed. Would you be open to including specific language to dictate how that additional money is spent by the states and local governments? And also, could you just elaborate a little further on Leader McConnell's call for legislation to shield businesses from legal liability if they reopen? Thank you.
Either the speaker or the leader can respond to that question, I believe.
Yes, first let me say that before I do respond, I'm so moved by the testimony of Blake and Jared and Shirley and Jason. Their dedication and their experience are so valuable to us. Jared talk about the dedication of the people that he works with, to Blake talking about his respect for the people that he serves, and Jason showing the connection and the stories of the people unemployed coming in, and Ms. Shirley with her story, and I'm very sad to hear that she has to have a medical procedure that she needs because of losing her job in the coronavirus. And so there are other casualties of this virus. When I say casualties, injuries left diagnoses left addressed because of it. So, but they really are teach us all the time, and they, as they go to work, about humanity. And Leap Saunders is about humanity, about meeting the needs of people that inspires him in his work. And as I say, we're all in this together. We'll get through it together to create a thriving community for our children, that our children and our families need. So I thank you. As I said to our special VIP guests earlier, our Blake and Jared and Shirley and Jason, their stories are the most compelling because they have the most connection and the most authenticity. As we talk about statistics, they're staggering, but the personal stories make all the difference in the world. So I thank them for what they do and for sharing that with us today. In terms of the funding, we may have two packages. We may have one that is state and one that is local. I don't know what you mean by giving direction as to how the money is spent. It is to support our heroes, That's what it is. It's these people are risking their lives to save lives, and now they may lose their jobs. So this is about our heroes, and they have, we've all named them, Chuck and I did, and so did Mr. Saunders, as well, in terms of health care workers, mental health care workers, all the people that contribute to the quality of life that we have as a country. So this is about giving the states the money to do their jobs, and as I say, Democratic and Republican governors are supporting this. Democratic Republican mayors are supporting this as well. So I'm not quite sure what you mean about us giving them direction on how to spend it. In terms of the liability, I associate myself with the remarks of the distinguished leader, Mr. Schumer, who earlier said, we are there to protect the workers. I don't think at this time, the coronavirus, that there's any interest in having any less protection for our workers, in fact, even more. If you wanted to follow up on what you meant by giving them direction, no, we're giving them money to support what they do, which is to meet the needs of the people and to recognize the heroism of the people who are doing the jobs.
Yes, ma'am. There were concerns raised by Republicans that any additional state and local money would be used for pensions or pre-existing financial difficulties before the pandemic took a toll on the economy. So I guess when I meant direction, it was more of restrictions on what that money could be used for to address some of those concerns from Republicans.
Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you something. They're not concerns. They're excuses. This money is desperately needed. And we have said that everything that we're doing is about the coronavirus and the needs that have arisen because of it. Chuck said it earlier, and I did too. This is about what are the outlays for the coronavirus and is the revenue lost because of the coronavirus. That's a big ticket item. Shamefully, Mitch McConnell, I don't know what's going with him, was saying, well, we're not paying for past mistakes. As I said earlier, he points out Illinois' troubles came from came from a Republican governor. It isn't about that. It's about now and as we go forward, coronavirus outlays, coronavirus loss of revenue. So that's what this is about. And we don't need any prescription from anybody about mythology or just excuses not to do the job. It's really sad. It's disgraceful because there is such tremendous need. We're going to get this job done.
And let me just add to what the speaker just said. I mean, we've got to keep state and local governments solvent, to keep up with the high level of demand for services. You just heard from four workers. We will give you stories of workers all across the country risking their lives every single day, even risking their families' lives by going home to provide these essential services. We're not going to fall for a smokescreen as far as you can do this or you can do that. The money should go to state and local governments to provide the level of services that are necessary to stop the talk about furloughs and reductions to those everyday heroes. I think the American public really want to see those services continuing to be provided. They get it. They understand the importance of those services, and they will be very upset if these workers who are doing the jobs every single day are given a pink slip. And that's the bottom line. So we aren't going to fall for any kind of smokescreen.
And we will go next to Natalie Andrews with Wall Street Journal. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you so much for doing this call. When talking about state and local funding, do you have an amount that you are looking at? Speaker Pelosi, I know you said that perhaps the amount that had been given to small businesses, I think that's around $700 billion. Is that what you're looking for in CARES 2?
We are getting an update from the governors. And by the way, let me just preface that by saying, despite the ridiculous statement of Leader McConnell, the support for state and local across among the governors is universal. They have all been very, very supportive of the frontline workers, as well as supportive of state and local government getting what they need to keep their states running and their communities running. As we go forward with this, we have been getting amounts, as they've tried to put a number on what the needs would be, and I just want to be current about that. As I said when I said something about that right now, as Mr. Very distinguished president of AFSCME said, that we need the state and local one at 500 and then another couple hundred for FMAP, mm-hmm. for Medicaid. We've had a hard time selling Medicaid to them at this in the last bill, but we hope to have it. We had it in one of the bills. You know, we passed four bipartisan bills. One of them had FMAP. We need more FMAP. That's what we'll try to get. That's the Medicaid money. We've had a state and local at $150 billion in the CARES 1, and now we need more. And we want it to be clear that it's for outlays for coronavirus and coronavirus-related loss of revenue. That. So when we talk about the figure, we may need more for the local county and municipalities may have a number of their own. So, you know, we have to say if this is just state and local, if it's state and local, it's one number. If we're dividing it up, and it looks like we're going to need 500 for the states, and we may need a very big figure also for counties, municipalities. Now, let me be very clear, and this applies to the previous question. Not all of this money would be put out right now. This would be over time. Over time, maybe even a couple of years. To make up for all of this. So it is, it's not like the PPP, the loans, where the money is going out the door second. This money will be, have the certainty that services will be rendered, that people will be employed, that community will be served. So that's that. Now, let me just make another point. The leader made a point earlier about we can't open up until we have the testing and we can't. We have to go forward in a very safe. This is about science, science, science. So as we're doing these things, we want our decisions to be based on science and what is really about the health and safety of the American people. It's about their lives. It's also about their livelihoods, and that's what this bill is about, lives and livelihoods of the people who are doing the jobs for us. It's also about the life of our democracy. We're going to have in this bill funding to the states over and above that money we talked about for vote by mail or, you know, a vote by mail in many of the states. Overwhelmingly, the American people support that. So we have a clear agenda of what we've been saying all along, what we had in CARES 1. In CARES 1, we had state and local. In CARES 1, we had $400 million for vote by mail. So it is just a continuation of what we have done in a bipartisan way. But I brought it back to the health issue because clearly there is an indication that science has not been respected as from the start on all of this, and that has prolonged the agony. They don't believe in science, and they don't believe in some of them in governance. You don't believe in science to make an informed decision. And you don't believe in governance to meet the needs of Americans. The luxury of making frivolous statements harmful. So that is part of what the fight is, to enlarge the issue to say, we believe employees do for us, the quality of our lives, the dedication, the inspiration that they are, the care that they have for, and respect they have for the people they serve.
And we'll go next to Michael Debonis with Washington Post. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thanks for doing the call. Madam Speaker, addressing this issue with state and local at some point will require the House to come back. We heard Leader Hoyer announce your decision to not bring the House back next week. And I just wanted to ask you to what degree are you concerned that the House will be at a disadvantage not being in Washington next week while the Senate is? If you just talk about the decision that you made in consultation with the attending physician on the deciding not to bring the members back next week.
Thank you, Michael. We have no choice. If the Capitol physician says, recommends that we not come back, then we have to take that guidance in the interest of the safety of the people who work here, the custodians in the building, those who have to be here more because we're here, the press, the staff, the members of Congress, the staff of the Congress as well who make the Congress run in addition to our own staff. So we have no choice. Once Capitol physician made that ordered that today, we had no choice. However, we do not see ourselves at a disadvantage. We are constantly working. We're preparing our legislation. Now, maybe you could talk about it more so that people know more about what the House is doing, because a bill does not spring from the head of Zeus. It is something that has to be worked upon, many committees involved, the committees working with their committees, committee memberships to get the job done. Whether the Senate is in or not is a matter of a health decision that their leadership has to make. But we could not take any chances because there's so many more of us and so much more custodial staff and the rest that goes into Congress being in session. Ms. Shirley can tell you that as a school custodian. Whatever it is, it would be irrelevant. It's about safety, it's about science, it's about getting the job done for the American people. I was disappointed, I guess, because our members were very eager to vote by proxy. They have full support for our being able to do that. We wanted to do it in a bipartisan way, and those conversations continue. I'm hopeful that we can get that done. Bipartisan conversations continue. Mr. Hoyer, Mr. McCarthy, as well as our leadership, Zoe Lufkin and Jim McGovern, the leadership at Cole, and in terms of bipartisan discussion about how we could proceed with our committee work, whether it's virtual or whether some in smaller numbers could come back to do that. So we feel very prepared. When we came before and did the voice vote, we did so at the direction of the Sergeant of Arms and the Capitol Physician, and it worked fine. When it was a recorded vote, we did so at the direction of the Sergeant of Arms and the Capitol Physician, and it was fine. They are prepared for us to do that again, except this Capitol Physician just said what was happening in the region, the District of Columbia, the neighboring counties, and the rest. Whatever his decision was, whatever went into it, I respect, because we cannot, whatever we have, we're going to get done for the American people as soon as we can safely and quickly do for them. But we're not, we can't be bothered about whether we're disadvantaged to the Senate. What we have to be bothered about is the health and safety of the workers in the capital of the United States as we do the work for the American people.
And we'll go next to Eleanor Mueller with Politico. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. My question is for the speaker. I actually have two. The first is whether or not the House is working on legislation that would provide hazard pay to emergency and healthcare workers. And then the second question is, I was just wondering if you could give some kind of update on the efforts regarding paid sick leave that are also going into this package. Thank you.
Thank you, Eleanor. Yes, hazard pay is very important to us because we do believe if there were ever a circumstance where people were working in hazardous conditions as a threat to their lives for what they are doing, it is in the here and now. We'll have more to say about that later in the week, but that's something that Bobby Scott from the House side, of Virginia, the chair of the Education and Labor Committee, are working with Patty Murray, the chair of the ranking on health, working with them to see if we go on that. But it is is an important priority to us, as well as taking a look to see what we can do to have some debt forgiveness for those who have student loans and who are working in precarious situations as well. So, yes, we're doing that. And then, basically, our concern when we did the first bill is we really couldn't get them to agree to language that was pervasive enough to cover everyone. They said if you have a child who needs to be home from school, if you have a parent who is whose caregiver cannot come, or whose senior center, health center was closed, then you could be home to do that, something like that. We thought that it should be for anybody who had to care for someone, themselves or another person. For example, Eleanor, if your mom, a person's mom, was healthy and didn't have a caregiver, didn't go to the senior center or something, but was an older person, and she got the coronavirus under the language that they insisted upon, you couldn't take sick leave to take care of her because she had not lost a caregiver, you know, the other criteria that I mentioned. Well, that just doesn't even make any sense, but they just wouldn't go there. So that language we would like to change so that it is more real and authentic to what family leave, medical leave is supposed to be about. And then in terms of sick leave, if we need to expand that there are agencies of government, FAA, VA, Veterans Affairs, Veterans Administration, that are not in there for some reason, whatever it is, and they have to be included. So we need to address the fact that we value the principle that people, if they're sick, they should have 2 weeks of sick leave, that if they're a caregiver or sick themselves, they should have family and medical leave, but it has to be, it cannot cut people out for some reason of language or technicality in how previous bills have been written.
Are there going to be any efforts to expand paid sick leave when it comes to healthcare workers specifically? Because I know that they're obviously certain healthcare workers are carved out of a lot of the CARES Act provision.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the first part of your question. You said
are there any efforts to expand the paid sick leave provisions when it comes to healthcare workers specifically?
Healthcare workers? Why would they? You're saying that is there any effort to include healthcare workers in family and medical leave?
In paid sick leave, since there are some home healthcare workers and nursing home employees. And
okay, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking federal government. Yeah, well, we'll have a whole. We really do have to address that because these are really the people who are saving lives. And doing so at risk to their own. Of course, this is near and dear to the hearts of many of us, and actually they deserve hazard pay as well. I always use the story of somebody saying, I think it costs too, I think if you're charging $30 an hour, that's too much. And she said back, if you don't think I'm worth $30 an hour, do you think your mother is? And we have to recognize this is part of the culture of our country. Some of them are included in different, depends on how they, you know, under what auspices they have their jobs. But yeah, they certainly should have access to that, especially, well, they should, period, but they should also have it because of the risks they take. Let me just say, though, in a broader sense, what we wanted to do, which we had met with resistance, but we'll keep trying, is to have a special enrollment program for the Affordable Care Act so many more people can be included there if they are not already, to have some opportunities. Health. This is all about health. It has an economic consequence. But it's about health. And some of the challenges and the disagreements that we've had between us, for example, the President of the United States trying to, in the courts, to undo the Affordable Care Act and all of the benefits, including the benefit of a pre-existing condition. He should just stop that. He shouldn't say, let's have a special enrollment period so people can enroll. So there are a series of things that we are trying to do that could capture those folks, but again, to address specifically the auspices under which they are employed and how we can be helpful to them, including some assistance, direct assistance.
Thank you, Speaker.
Thank you.
And our next question. And our next question comes from Alex Bolton with The Hill. Please go ahead.
Hi, Speaker Pelosi. I was hoping you could give us a sense of how long it's going to take to get the new Oversight Committee on Coronavirus Relief up and running. And do you anticipate other committees also performing oversight functions, and how much of that do you expect to happen and when, since you're not coming back next week?
Oh, thanks, Alex. Yeah, oversight, very important, as people have seen in terms of the PPP. PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program, is something that we all supported, helped to shape. We just want to make sure that the money gets to the places that it is most needed and the most efficient way. But that's not all of it. This is hundreds of billions of dollars, trillions of dollars, almost $2 trillion now. And we want to be sure that there is no waste, fraud, abuse, that there is no price gouging, no profiteering, and the rest, and all of that. And again, they're just we already are getting concerns about mask makers who are selling masks, getting paid for them, and they don't even exist, the masks. We're getting people hearing, if you've seen in the public domain, articles about those who may try to scam people out of their direct payment check and that. But in any event, this is about hoping it all works perfectly, but recognizing where there's big money involved, we have to have oversight. I'm very proud of Jim Clyburn and the tone that he has set of nonpartisanship and just doing the right thing for the American people. I will very soon be announcing my names, maybe later today. I spoke to the leader yesterday to see how ready he was with his names. We'll see, but we'll be making our announcement anyway. In terms of that committee, they have a clear mandate, which is written into the law. In terms of the other committees, absolutely, positively so, Alex. Each of the committees, whether it's Energy and Commerce, whether we're talking about the Ways and Means Committee, we're talking about Appropriations Committee, we're talking about Education and Labor, talking about the Agriculture Committee, talking about the Oversight Committee itself, the broader Oversight Committee. The list goes on. All of our committees have oversight responsibility, and we encourage them to exercise that oversight. This was not in any way to take the place of that. This, though, is to give focus to the purpose of making sure the taxpayer dollar is spent wisely and well to promote the health and growth of the lives and the livelihood of the American people. The other committees have their roles, and they have other responsibilities as well. And again, on the issue of health care, we want all the committees that are related, have health care related responsibilities to be moving forward with that. We want to move forward with H.R. 3, our bill to lower the cost of prescription drugs. We want to move forward with infrastructure in a green way to preserve our planet. We want to move forward with our initiatives on improving our cleaning up government in terms of strengthening our democracy. Those are the three things we ran on in 18. We continue to have them as important values. And the list goes on and on. Education, housing, the rest. We have a lively committees doing a great deal of work in this regard anyway. But in terms of the oversight, yes, indeed. No, this is not to take the place of that. They're encouraged to do so, encouraged to interact, in fact, if they have information that is useful from one committee to the next. There is a procedure for that. It's written into the law how something like that would happen. So it's not anything that the public would not be aware of. So it is... it's an interesting time because, again, there are questions about testing, tracing, isolation. and then the treatment that will follow. And I'm glad you asked this question because this is not so much about oversight. In other words, in terms of past mistakes that the president made, save that for an after-action review. That's then. Mm-hmm. This is now. As we go forward, we want this money spent, and we want people to know that there will be transparency and there will be accountability for how this money is spent. So I don't know why, I mean, I would hope the Republicans would join us in that. I don't know why they would be against preventing waste, fraud, and abuse, price gouging, and profiteering, but nonetheless. The other point that I want to make is this, and we have to be looking, we have been looking forward in this way. Say there's a vaccine in a month or so. We have to be, let's hope, I mean, there are all kinds of things. There are probably six initiatives that are alive right now that have some prospects, but we don't know until we see the efficacy and the safety of what is being produced. In any event, let's assume that there is something on the horizon, either a cure or a vaccine. We have to be sure right now, and even hopefully there's some plan of this, but we'll find out and ensure that there will be, that we have the capacity and the manufacturing capability to manufacture that right now. And in order to do that, we have to have a supply chain that is ready. And again, this is a pandemic in the whole world. It's not like we are stricken, and if something is invented someplace else, they'll just ship it all to us. No, they have their own challenges. So we have to be as close to self-sufficient as we can be. So that means we should be preparing right now to manufacture, and to do that, we have to have a supply chain of the ingredients to make it, and that means that say we have a vaccine or a cure, that we need the syringes and the vials and all the things that go with it. Whenever it is, we should be producing that right now. It might take a year to develop all of that syringe, shall we say, vial technology that we will need for vaccinating so many American people. Let's just get it going right now as soon as possible and as many fronts as possible. Let's put it in the stockpile. We'll be ready. But you can't say, well, now we have a vaccine now. Does anybody have a syringe? That's one. The second part of it is that hopefully will be is in the works, you know, behind the scenes at the wherever in government. But we must insist that there be an ethical distribution of it. We have this vaccine. It just cannot be for those who can pay. It cannot be for one state or another. It has to be. And this is something that the American people would lose all trust in government if this was not distributed in an ethical way. So the capacity, the manufacturing capacity, the raw material to get it done, the supply chain, the instruments of delivering, whether it's a syringe, et cetera, put them in the stockpile, and at the same time be planning for an ethical distribution of it. We can do all of that now, nonpartisan, science-based, all contributing to how soon we can open up government really in a way that gives us all the comfort in the world that people are protected and our economy can once again grow. If I just thank you, Alex. If I just may say one more thing, all this that we're saying about state and local and FMAP, the Medicaid money and the rest that goes to the state, this is all a stimulus. So it is meeting the needs of people. It's paying their salaries. It's keeping them on the job so that they can protect our lives, our quality of life, our safety, our protections against this virus spreading, the humanity of it all, but is also a stimulus to the economy. So with that, I want to thank President Lee for being who he is, a great champion for humanity, for our workers, for the people who the workers serve. He carries those concerns in his heart, in his head, and with a big, strong voice before any audience he speaks before is an inspiration to all of us. as if all of the workers of AFSCME. And again, I want to thank our special guests, Jerry, Jason, Shirley, Ms. Shirley, and Blake, for sharing their stories with us, because that hits us, that's heart to heart for our supportive community and indeed of humanity. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President.
Well, thank you, Madam Speaker, and I want to thank Leader Chuck Schumer for participating on this call, but just as important, I want to thank Blake and Shirley and Jason and Jared for being the everyday heroes every single day. Now, let me say this to the reporters who are still on the line, that you should make contact with AFSCME if you're interested in talking to any additional AFSCME members about their work on COVID response. We can also help you if you want to interview academics, experts, and others who can speak to the urgent need for state and local aid. So thanks for being on the call. Thanks for your time. Be safe out there. Thank you.
Thank you.